Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law.
See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to a January 22, 2009 segment from the Kentucky Water Fuel Museum. With us today is a teacher of a vocational college in Northeast Ohio, namely Ken Steyer. And Ken, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Well, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Now, you are a very experienced automotive mechanic and an instructor at a technical college in the Cleveland area. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
It's actually known as the Ohio Technical College?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it's quite an expansive place, actually. It presently has about 900 students there. It's one of the best-kept secrets. They teach automotive repair, heavy-duty truck repair, auto body, auto restoration, power sports, which includes motorcycles, snowmobiles, personal watercraft, truck driving. It's high performance and welding programs. It's quite a place.
Now, how long have you been a teacher there?
5.5 years.
Okay, and prior to that, you were a professional mechanic?
Yes. Well, I taught at a high school for a couple of years. But other than that, yes, I was a professional mechanic for over 25 years.
Okay, and so for people who aren't from the U.S., what is the standard of excellence when it comes to automotive mechanic training and certification?
Well, it's referred to as ASE, Automotive Service Excellent, and several of the states actually require those certifications for you to do repairs on automobiles. And what it amounts to is a rather rigorous certification process. And I myself have achieved something that not a lot of folks have done with that. I'm a certified master auto, master truck, master paint and body, alternate fuel, advanced engine performance, and engine machinist certified.
Okay, so you've been at this a long time, something like 35 years, is that right?
Yes, altogether 35 years. Actually, part-time, I was doing this as a teenager before that, so.
Sure.
But I'm only counting after I was out doing it professionally.
Right. So you've received numerous certifications over the years.
Oh, yes.
And this is by going back to school, actually, for like a short seminar, and then you receive another certification?
No, you're constantly studying, and it's not the seminars that allow the certifications, because no matter where you go to the schools, no matter what you learn or pick up as you keep getting updated, and in my business, we constantly have to be updated. In order to get the certifications, there's the independent ASE agency that you have to go and test with. So no matter how you do in classes or anything else, if you can't pass those tests, you're still not certified.
Okay. Now, when you mentioned alternative fuels, what kind of alternative fuels were considered in that certification?
Oddly enough, it's not as expansive as I'd like to see. Primarily, it's CNG, natural gas, propane, and the gaseous type fuels. They don't really consider the electrics and some of the other things as some of the alternates. They may come out with some of those things in the future, but right now it's primarily gaseous and alternate fuels for in a tank.
So are you saying there's no special certification yet for working on a Prius or an electric vehicle like the Chevy Volt that is supposedly coming out?
No, there really is not. Hopefully that the one certifications, automotive electrical, will cover part of that, as will truck electrical. But they don't have one specifically for those vehicles yet, other than the manufacturer's certification. And the only way to obtain that is...
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I say the only way to obtain that would be working in that specific dealership.
Uh-huh. Okay. Now, at what point did you become aware of the possibility of using hydrogen from water as a supplement to fossil fuel?
It first got my attention about 2 years ago. And I'll be honest, when I first heard about it, I thought somebody was slightly insane.
Yeah.
However, as I started researching and looking at it, I found that it was making a lot of sense.
Okay, and then you went beyond simply accepting it as a valid concept. You actually began teaching it in your vocational school.
Well, I never accept things at face value for valid concept when it comes to a vehicle. I'm the type of person who will research and test even various products when they say this product will do that. It's not infrequent that I get it and try it out and analyze it and see what it does. So as I was getting into looking at the hydrogen generators, I kept looking at it more and more and more, and it got to the point where we had to do this.
And when you say we, you mean you and your class, your students?
Well, myself, some associates, some people I know that were working on it, and then, yeah, we took it into the classroom. And the first one we actually made, we did in my classroom. And we came up with many variations of it. We tried different plate configurations, different mixtures of solutions. We experimented with quite a while. And we found that sometimes experiments aren't always good. I had one student who said, well, what if I put a lighter down here next to this? And I said, well, with the opening we have in that jar, it would probably back up into the jar, because we were using a glass jar, and we didn't have a what's known as a bubbler to stop it from backing up, because we were still just experimenting this. This was actually in my classroom. And he decided, for some odd reason, when I told him that this was not a good idea, that he would try it. And, of course, he blew up our jar. I had glass shrapnel and water and stuff that blew all across the front of the room. Of course, we were wearing safety glasses, and we were ready for this type of thing, so there was no harm done. But it sure was an attention getter.
Yeah, well, it teaches you to be careful, huh?
Yes, it does.
And also not to use glass containers.
Right, there's another factor. Yeah, the glass wasn't the best of choices.
But you may not realize how significant it is that you introduced this into the classroom, because as far as I know, yours is the only automotive tech classroom in the U.S. that has actually taken on this project.
Well, what amazes me about it is that when you talk to some of the others, they like to be the standard naysayers. Oh, that won't work. They come up with all kinds of reasons why it won't work. But the fact is, it does. We have three teachers there that teach the alternate fuel on a regular basis, and I'm one of them. And what we've done is, now in one of the other classes, we've also built some hydrogen generators there, HHO generators, I should say. And we've put them on a couple of different vehicles with success. The first one, being the guinea pig, was the little clunker of a work car that I drive back and forth. Now, keeping in mind, I go 38 miles each way every day between the college and my home. But it's an older car. It's nothing special. It's a 94 Ford Tempo. And I have a couple other cars, but that's the one I drive for work. So we had it up there, and we started experimenting. When we came up with a hydrogen-oxygen generator that we thought was doing a pretty significant job, we went ahead and installed it on my Tempo. And what was significant is the tank was completely filled up. Then it was driven, a mileage check. Then the generator was put on and rechecked all in the same day, same weather conditions, same route. One was to the college, one was back home from the college. So it traveled on the same roads with the same load in it and as identical of a test as you could get. And we actually realized 5 miles a gallon increase on that automobile. So our first go-run with this was quite successful.
And so it went from what to what?
We were at 25, actually about 25.4, and we got it up just about 30.5.
Wow. Now, that represents an increase of about, what, 20%?
About 20%, yes.
Yeah.
And that's pretty significant.
Well, what about the tailpipe pollution? Did you check that?
Actually, we didn't, unfortunately, and I wish I had. And it's something we're going to go back and do. I've got a different class going on right now, but I have another alternate fuel class coming up, and we're going to do some of those checks. In the other class, one of the students built a unit and put it on a Camaro, and he took a very unique approach to building it It wasn't actually quite as efficient as mine, but he took plexiglass, about 3/8 of an inch thick, and he cut it and made a box. So he had a plexiglass container, and he mounted that in the Camaro. Now, he didn't do a good fuel mileage check. However, on his car, we did do emissions testing, and we did get a reduction in hydrocarbon, and we got a little bit of reduction in carbon monoxide as well. But we didn't do that on mine. That will be coming in the future. We're going to do that. The significant thing is this was an older Camaro, and we shouldn't admit that it was modified and he had removed some of the computer controls and such, but it's old enough it probably really didn't matter. And he hooked it up, and it was a carbureted unit. And the interesting thing is when we would power up the hydrogen generator, it actually increased the idle speed by 200 RPM. And according to him, granted this was a seat-of-the-pants test, but he said it had better acceleration and appeared to be getting better mileage, but he didn't actually check the mileage. But we did get a measurable difference in emissions, and we did get a measurable increase of idle speed.
Yeah, and that's
so that was significant, too.
And that's in harmony with the 1918 patent of another Ohioan, namely Charles Fraser, who first patented a hydrogen booster device. So
they've been around for a while.
Yeah, and it doesn't say much for our society that we're having to rediscover this 90 years later. You know?
That is quite a statement, especially when we've done this twice and made some significant differences. I had another student that made one to put on a motorcycle, but he was trying to be very innovative in his design, which we encourage some experimentation. But the reality is his production wasn't very good with his design, and it was taking too much electrical current to operate. And to put it on a motorcycle, it would have never been able to function. But it was a good experiment, and he did have some success with it, but not as much as the other units we've made. Each one of them have been substantially different.
Right.
And we're planning on making another one coming up when I get into the next alternate fuel class, which will be starting another 4 weeks from now. Although there's two others going on presently, but the next one I'm doing will start in 4 weeks. And I have an old classic car with a V8 and a four-barrel carburetor, and we're going to hook it up and put it on that and see what happens.
Great.
As well.
That's wonderful. Now, if you were in a conversation with one of these, for instance, the editor of Popular Mechanics magazine, who recently attempted to debunk hydrogen boosters as being worthless, what would you say to him to enlighten him as to how this is actually working to improve efficiency and reduce pollution? What would be your simple explanation to him?
Well, the simple explanation is, quite frankly, to present him with the facts. We did this. We have results. It works. The science behind it is valid. In any technology, there's always people that are trying to debunk or, oh, gee, the manufacturers don't do that, so it can't be good, things of that nature. There actually is a bit of a reason why the manufacturers don't do it, and that's the fact that they have to warranty any of their emission systems for 5 years and 50,000 miles without having to maintain it. And, of course, with an HHO generator, you do have to maintain it. You have to fill the solution and things like that. It's not that difficult, but
it would complicate things for the automakers.
It would. There's another service that people are going to have to do periodically. Every couple of tanks of gas, you're going to have to top off of your liquid solution and some things like that. And while this is not difficult, it's really not any harder than putting window washer fluid in. And believe me, in this kind of year, the weather we've had up by Lake Erie, I use a lot of window washer fluid.
Yeah, exactly.
Going back and forth. So it's really no more of a difficult thing.
No,
you also have to have the solution. But, you know, a lot of the public doesn't accept that.
Yeah, the public is pretty lame when it comes to doing anything under the hood anymore.
They really are.
But we have to admit that the automakers haven't made it easy on them by complicating things and even putting covers over the engine compartment. You can't even see the engine anymore.
It's pretty ridiculous. They do that in the name of style, but to a technician, it's nothing but an annoyance, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Now, and I'm not really sure why the style has to be under the hood instead of on the interior and on the body of the car.
Yeah. Other things that they're doing to vehicles now that are quite complex, much more sophisticated than a hydrogen fuel system from water, and yet this is causing some concern. Perhaps you'd like to enlighten the audience as to some changes in some of the controls that are being put on vehicles that are, it's actually alarming to those of us who are concerned about.
Well, there's two of them. I'd like to start with one, with what you're seeing showing up in California that Honda is actually making. And it's going into production in low term, and then there's one that's huge widespread. But let's hit the mild one first. And that is a car that runs hydrogen fuel cell. It's actually an electric car, and it uses compressed hydrogen at high pressures to operate an electric fuel cell device to create electricity in the car. The car is remarkably efficient. The car is wonderful. The problem is, to make 1,000 kilowatts of power from the hydrogen, it takes 4,000 kilowatts of power to produce the hydrogen. So overall, emissions by creating the hydrogen, getting into the car, et cetera, it actually, even though the car produces no emissions at all, creating the hydrogen to run the car with our present production capacities for the high-pressure systems and things of that nature, we're actually using an environmental negative. It's using more fossil fuels and energy to create it than it would if we just put gas in the car.
Yeah, and that's in line with the current paradigm of selling fossil fuel. Now,
it is.
What about the other aspect, though, this alarming change in newer vehicles?
Oh, it's quite remarkable, and most people don't know about it. And once again, just like people saying the hydrogen generators, the HHO units, are bunk and they don't exist, I've also have people tell me that this technology doesn't exist. They can't do it. It's not there. But if they look around, it's very, very apparent. It's what's called telematics, and it's required on every 2008 automobile that's manufactured and sold in this country or manufactured outside of this country and sold. What it's commonly known as, the most notable one that people would recognize, is OnStar. And they say, oh, well, the OnStar is great. It's wonderful. You lock your keys in the car, and they'll open it for you. You don't realize how they're doing that. The new cars are so complex that when you hook a scan tool to it with the electrical systems and the computers, you can start the car, you can shut it off, you can change the radio stations, you can roll the windows up and down, whatever you'd like to do to that car. You can apply the brakes, you can rev the engine, you can make it idle. And the capability with telematics is that they control everything electronic in your car from a remote location. Now, they promote it as a good thing. The one manufacturer, if your check engine light comes on, they'll contact you through your radio speakers and tell you it's on and do an initial diagnostic of the car. They'll call the dealership. They'll make an appointment with you at the closest dealer. And when you get there, the repairer is already made out, and the initial diagnostics is done, and the technician can take it from there. All fine, well, and good, great. But the telematics have a flip side to that. California is already doing this. It's not coming. It's in place. When you have a car with the telematics on it and your check engine light's on and you drive down the highway, you're going to get a notice in the mail because it's going to pick up your check engine light, the fault codes, and the VIN number of the car. You're going to get a notice that you've got to take your car in and get it fixed, or you're not going to be able to operate your car. Now, what OnStar is capable of now, again, we'll look at the positive side first. If your car is stolen, you call them up. They locate it on the GPS. The officer gets contacted, and he gets up within about a block behind of the car. They drop it down to an idle so they can't accelerate. And at the same time, they roll up the windows and lock the doors. The driver cannot override it. He can't open the door. He can't roll down the window. He can't accelerate. And when the car gets down to about 5 miles an hour, they apply the anti-lock brakes and bring it to a stop. The officer walks up, says, I'm here, open the door. They take the guy out. The thief is caught. No grand glorious gestures. And Sheriff Burnell doesn't get another script on his show because there was no high-speed chase and anything else involved.
Now, has this actually been done?
Yes.
This is being done now?
Yes.
Car thieves are being apprehended this way?
Yes.
Okay, so what's the difference between that OnStar feature that's been available now for some time and what's required on every new vehicle?
Well, that's basically what it is, but people didn't realize how intensive OnStar could be. Now, they typically don't do that because of privacy laws that we've had in place. They can't go and just shut down a car. When it's stolen, then the operator requests it. That can be done. However, what we're looking at now is the government's wanting to change some of the privacy laws. They're already starting to do this in California, which is why you get the notice that your car's not meeting emission standards. But now you're going down the road, and the advantage that they're looking for, maybe there's that high-speed chase again. They can find the car with the GPS, see which one is speeding, and do the same thing. Now, with the privacy laws changed, without invasion of privacy, or maybe it is, but it's permitted, when you get in a high-speed chase, somebody's taken off across town, they're endangering people, they can shut that car off. Now, that's an advantage to a point, but the potential for misusing this is phenomenal. Can you picture there's a bank robbery? They don't know who it is yet. They shut all the cars down for five blocks, and that's a very real possibility. Here's another one that they're also doing now already. You'll find this as an aftermarket add-on into the car tying into the system. But the manufacturers are going to start looking at doing this on their lease vehicles and things like that. You don't make the payment, your car doesn't start. They shut you down. So if it's due on the 30th and that's your deadline, you've gone past your grace period, okay, you got to get to work. You're trying to pay the bill. You get out in the morning, your car isn't going to start until you make a payment and they give you the codes and you enter it and it'll restart. Now, the code is with the aftermarket.
What if they lock the doors? Lock the doors with you in it. You're not getting out of here unless you make a payment with your credit card.
Well, they haven't gone to that point yet. I don't think they will. You know, that could cause a lot of problems.
In prison.
But, you know, if you're trying to get to work, say it's 1 o'clock in the morning, they shut it down at midnight, and you weren't necessarily aware of that, and you've got some type of emergency where you have to get somebody to a hospital or some type of situation like that. All of a sudden, your car doesn't start, and you can't do anything about it, even if you have your payment ready until the next business day. You know, the potential for abuse is phenomenal.
Okay, we know that there's a $25,000 fine for modifying the emission system on a vehicle, right?
Right.
The emissions control system.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what would keep them from shutting your vehicle down anytime there's a perception of your having modified the system?
It's entirely possible, and while that hasn't been discussed too much, I see that as something coming in the future with everything else I've seen with the telematics.
Yeah. Well, there's no question that we're being led down a slippery slope of technology getting the better of us.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think this is a good example of that.
Absolutely. You know, on the surface, these things look great. You know, no more high-speed chases, a lot of safety, and that's how they're promoting it. You know, your car gets stolen, you're going to find it, you're going to be able to get it back. Those are wonderful things. But the potential for abuse, on the other hand, is just
phenomenal. What if a hacker gets control of these the method of controlling the vehicle of another person?
It's possible. It's possible.
The thieves could victimize you based on their ability to control your vehicle.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's going to be difficult to do, but, hey, hackers have gotten into the Pentagon before.
Yeah, they've done everything else. You know.
Yeah. And here's something else they're doing with it that a lot of people wouldn't be aware of. They're doing this with trucks already. Have you ever noticed when you go by some of the way stations that they have a boom out over the highway with a couple
of
devices on it? That's a telematic system. And right now what it's doing is it's contracted with the states and with the trucks, so it's all a voluntary thing. But because a lot of those trucks are air ride suspension and they hold them at a given height, you put more weight in the truck, it takes more air pressure to hold it at the right height. So by monitoring the air pressure, you know how much weight is on the truck. So as it pulls up to one of these things going down the highway, it flashes a light in the cab, it's connected, and they've checked your VIN, your speed, your weighted load, how much weight's on those axles, and then it'll pop a green light and you go right on through. So it saved the aggravation of the weight station. You haven't pulled over, you haven't stopped, you're on your way. So there's a convenience there. The flip side is, if that truck's going a little bit too fast, when he gets to the next weight station, all the information's recorded. You can't get from point A to point B in that amount of time. Here's your speeding ticket.
Isn't that something?
And they're going to be doing that with automobiles.
Yeah.
You think red light cameras and hidden cameras by the side of the road taking your license plates is wicked. You go too fast, you're going to get a ticket in the mail.
Yeah.
And you didn't even go buy a camera.
Two places at once.
Yeah. So, again, the potential. And quite frankly, my own opinion, whether folks agree with me or not, I think the red light cameras and the speed cameras with nobody there are primarily a revenue generator. I don't really think they do anything for safety.
In California, in San Diego, my brother-in-law was given a $400 red light ticket. And, you know, when he told me that it was TRW that supplies the cameras for the city of San Diego, and they do it, I guess, on a percentage basis. And so here's a military-industrial complex doing much what I think Dwight Eisenhower warned about when he said, beware the military-industrial complex. When he said that as he left the White House in the 50s, I don't think he envisioned a red light camera being put in by one of the major players in the military-industrial technology doing that for money. You know, I mean, it was already bad enough that they charged $600 for a toilet seat or a screwdriver or whatever, but that they're charging us $400 for running a yellow light, you know, a stale light.
Yeah.
And think about it, a person earning minimum wage, that's a couple weeks' work.
Yes, it is. And now the system is mandatory in a 2008 automobile. And I've had people say, oh, that's not in my car. I don't have that. I don't have OnStar. Well, actually, you do. You just don't know it's there. The only thing that's not there is the button to push to contact them.
Yeah.
And granted, OnStar is the General Motors name, but every company out there has a name for it. I'm just using that because it's the one people commonly can relate to. It's the most widely known.
Here's the reason why I think it's appropriate that we even mention this on this program, because we know that it's possible to make a clean-burning fuel from water under the hood. And
mm-hmm.
instead of doing this simple technology, they're going to these nonsense, high-tech, ridiculous TVs and, you know, high-tech stereo systems, and now this nonsense of remote control of your vehicle, and yet they're avoiding the simple solution to the energy and pollution problem.
Wouldn't it make sense that if we can put this on the car and make it run clean, that you could also monitor that if you wanted to monitor things? And if you need to add fluid to it, it could tell you?
Oh, absolutely. In other words, if we were to apply all the high-tech gadgetry technology that we're enjoying, if you want to call it enjoying, that our children are playing with, these high-tech electronic games and so on, and yet the technology required to turn water into fuel and avoid the fossil fuel nightmare that we've created is much, much simpler.
It really is.
And we won't
and
go there.
What's amazing is you take
this nonsense.
Yeah, and you take folks like Mechanics Illustrator, whichever magazine, and they say, oh, no, this doesn't work. We've checked it out. Well, obviously they didn't do it properly because we know for a fact that this does work.
And yet these magazines represent the pinnacle of our ability to create awesome devices.
Awesome devices and various image.
Now, but
and then that image goes to the government, and we do this in the form of legislators and lobbyists, and now we have a bunch of people sitting there that, and I'm not trying to insult them, that's not the point, but you have a whole bunch of people who have no idea what they're talking about. They're making legislation to control it.
Yeah.
Well, and they really don't know what they're talking
like
about.
Ken are standing up for what's right, bold enough, brave enough to come out and say, this is a valid technology, and even to teach it to the young people so that they can implement it as they go about their career in the automotive field.
Well, we're teaching it, and we're proving it. And it works.
Well, I really appreciate it. And we've come to the end of our time, but perhaps we can do a follow-up interview after you've had more time to teach more classes and see the results on more vehicles.
It'll be interesting. Report.
Well, thank you so much, and I am posting your email address in case anyone wants to contact you so that they can do so.
Oh, that's perfectly fine.
All righty. Take care.
Okay. Thank you.
And bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.